Hello, it's Ted Dabrowski here from WirePoints, and I'm joined by my partner in crime, Mark Glennon. And for this end of year time, we've decided that we're going to focus on 2022. What else, what better to focus on than the next year? This one, 2021, was a rough year, very difficult, complex in so many ways, and it's behind us, but not really, because much of what's happened this year will carry on into 2022. And I think that's a big part of what we'll talk about. And so, we made a list of things that we think matter. It's obviously not all inclusive. Maybe it's not in the right order. We'll see, but we'll give it a shot. And I think we'll try to do it kind of a lightning round style, try to be fast. Once we get through the issue, we'll move on to the next one. Obviously there's a lot of overlap in issues, so we'll have to handle that. And, but before we do that, Mark, you and I talked, and I know that you have one overlying theme that you look at for next year. So why don't you open up with that, please?
Yeah, Ted, I really see this in catastrophic terms, as many Americans now do. America is being destroyed by its own government, obviously, and so is Illinois. What are the real underlying causes of that? When you think about it and look at the polls closely, it's really no more than a quarter or a third of Americans that adhere to the radical left regime's views on the issues that are tearing the country apart. You know, the things like open borders, critical race theory, bad handling of the China and Afghanistan situation, the really threatening ones to America and to the state of Illinois are held by a minority. A minority, however, is able to control the Democratic Party and thereby control the government. How is that possible? My overview is that to consider the four horsemen of America's apocalypse. To reverse this in 2022, we got to think of stopping these four forces, because they enable that small minority of people to control the government. First, it's the educational system. We've talked about that frequently. That may be the most intractable, because it's going to be very difficult to get the radicals out of the educational system, particularly out of higher education. Parents have begun standing up to that at the local level, but that's still going to be a challenge. Second, the national corporate media. They distort, they control narratives, they often lie with impunity, constantly, regularly. And much of the public still remains beholden to what they say. They listen to CNN and the likes without any critical thinking. National Public Radio, New York Times, Washington Post, MSNBC, they are part of the problem. Next is the big tech platforms, which of course enable them. Unquestionably, their influence helped turn the election in the past, with rigging the narrative and suppressing stories that shouldn't have been suppressed. Polls have shown that the Biden emails from his son and brother would have been enough to turn the election. It would have taken 30,000 votes in a few key states to have done that. And finally, unfortunately, the national security apparatus has been part of this. Just a few examples. It's not one Russian conspiracy theory that they perpetrated during the Trump years, but they too helped suppress the story of the emails on the Biden computer. They did that deliberately and openly. Also, the story about Russians paying bounties to kill Americans in Afghanistan, that was entirely fictitious. Most Americans don't know that. That's been entirely disproven. Glenn Greenwald, among others, has written in great detail about this. So those are the four horsemen of America's apocalypse. Either you stop those or you won't stop that quarter or a third of Americans from controlling the country. And I'm hoping that as a resolution for next year, that Americans who want to see the country return to normalcy. Keep that in mind and keep those enemies in mind.
Well, Mark, you bring up a point that's hard to figure out how it flips. We've talked about Illinois and how it needs to be changed, and what are the triggers that eventually bring about change, and it's hard to see them. In many ways, you might think that something like COVID and the pandemic could have been a change for the good of the country in Illinois, but instead it's brought out what you and I might say the worst in many groups. So that said, Mark, we'll touch on a few of those issues as we talk about Illinois. Certainly the educational system, of course, we talk a lot about media. So I think I had a list here. I've got a list of quite a few things, but let's start out with, I moved one up based on what you just said. Let's move up federalism, because federalism has become a huge issue in the last couple of years. And again, COVID again is the instigator of why federalism matters, or maybe it doesn't matter anymore. So why don't you run us through that a little bit, because that's issue number one here.
Well, I am more optimistic perhaps than you, Ted, and this is actually a good example. Of course, the problem is that Democrats in Congress and Joe Biden were trying to federalize a long list of things that traditionally have been under state control by dumping huge amounts of money. It's now up to $180 billion that have come into Illinois of federal cash over the last 18 months. They've taken over functions that money has been spent on new programs. Their plan was to keep that going indefinitely. That was naive from the start. People have finally figured out that that's naive. There's more and more pressure. And I think most recently we saw that in the defeat of the so-called Build Back Better plan. There is no way that this money could be sustained. Even the Federal Reserve has finally woken to the fact that their lack of discipline has heavily contributed to the inflation that is now a major issue. They've announced a more rapid cutback in their funding of this attack on federalism, and they've essentially been a large part of the source of revenue for that, some $3 trillion created by the Federal Reserve Board over the last 18 months. So I see some hope there. And of course, states are getting more assertive in maintaining their rights. Texas has taken upon itself to build their own wall. Florida is taking steps to ensure that illegal immigrants don't come into Florida. More and more states, I think, are going to start standing up against this, the usurpation of their power. And I think courts ultimately are going to support them as well.
Yeah, I'd be in agreement with you on most of that. It is going to be a big battle as the two sides, whatever you want to call them, two sides, battle each over that. But it spreads into education, for example, whether it's the education, maybe more spending out of the government, certainly more entitlements. More basic income ideas. It's going to be the big battle over time. But I think it's the one to watch out for. The good news is that when money runs out, it's hard to perpetuate what they're trying to do. The question is, how much damage did they do in the meantime, and how many programs do they create that, create more dependence and take away the power of the individual, not just the states, but the power of the individual as well.
Yeah, they're open plan was that they thought that once people got hooked on these programs, and both the city of Chicago and Cook County have guaranteed income programs, as you know, small pilot programs funded by the federal government. Their thought was that once people get hooked on these programs, there's no going back, and that even Republicans, if they retook Congress, would be forced to continue the funding for them. That's not happening. And you see pushback even in Chicago on that guaranteed income program. The money's just not going to be there. And the support across most of America is not going to be there. So on this one, I'm fairly optimistic that the corner can be turned.
All right. Well, that's keep an eye on federalism. It matters, because the amount of money that came into Illinois really messed up many things here. Well, let's go to the big one, Mark. The 2022 election in Illinois. It's going to be a big one. Governor Pritzker, has held his 3 years now. He has to hold the fourth one, and he will continue to campaign on the things that he says he's done well. But you've got four Republicans, maybe five, maybe six, but four who are for sure we're clear about. And the question is, in I think in your opinion, my opinion, Wirepoint's opinion, if we say that, there's many things that have been done wrong in Illinois during COVID, before COVID, with the finances, with the schools. I think we have a long list of the length of the mandates, the disaster proclamations, 24 in a row, 30 days at a time, nearly 2 years of that. So I think there's an opening for a challenger. We could say Democrat or Republican, but it's not going to be a Democrat. So let's say a Republican. There's a challenge. There's an opening for a Republican to make the case for the way the state's being run is the wrong one. And it's, essentially we can say it's the same thing that's been perpetuated over 20, 30, 40 years. The question is, can somebody, poke a hole in what's going on here in Illinois and flip it?
Yeah, they're not going to gain control over the entire government in Illinois, obviously, but I think it's pretty widely agreed that the right candidate could beat Pritzker. And it's conceivable also that, moderates, Republicans, and I call most Republicans in Illinois moderates, could retake at least the House. But even just taking the governorship would be sufficient to put the brakes on some of these things. For example, change the Illinois State Board of Education, which has been pushing its critical race theory throughout the schools. This is such a fluid situation right now. People are turning so rapidly and so harshly against the regime that it's difficult to predict. And by the way, this isn't just Republicans versus Democrats. The fact is that no moderate Democrat has a chance, certainly not of getting through the Democratic primaries at the national level. But in most places of the country, Democratic moderates cannot win because they're stomped out by the radical left. A few of them have started to speak up. They didn't like the Build Back Better program, even if they didn't disagree with it in public. They're very upset with the radical left that I think has diminished their chances. Here in Illinois, it's the same thing. Who wouldn't want to see some of the traditional moderate Democrats that we've had in the past as a replacement for the modern left? They were far more rational and realistic than those in power now. Again, there's some cause for optimism here. And, I joke that I've been considered myself a JFK Democrat since I was too little to know what it meant. Today, it doesn't matter what it means because there's no such thing. But I'm hoping for a resurgence of them and some more moderate voices within the Democratic Party.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you take the issues, right? I mean, if you think about crime, just go through a few issues. Crime, I hate to do sides because it's, like you say, I don't know how much of this is Republican, Democrat versus whatever you want to call it, right, wrong, but take crime. One group treats criminals as victims when criminals should be treated as criminals. One side or one group, if you want to call it that, is ready to close schools as quickly as possible. The other one is fighting for keeping schools open. One wants lockdowns. The other one wants, businesses to be able to fight through and strive through a difficult period with everybody using, their own precautions, their own choices. The list goes on and on. Same thing with masks, with vaccinations, with everything that we've seen over the last 2 years. And so it's a pretty stark difference. And the question is, can Pritzker defend what he's done? And he's going to package it really, really well. On the face of it, he sounds great, right? He's managed quietly and without a problem COVID. He's going to say he's made Illinois one of the most ecologically friendly states in the world. He's going to say that he's managed the finances and he got two credit upgrades. after Rauner destroyed the state. So there's going to be he's going to paint a pretty picture of himself.
Yeah,
and then the question is, can the competition do something about that?
Yeah, and an op-ed just this week in the State Journal Register, which I think is probably an outline of his campaign strategy, and it's just that. He's claiming a balanced budget, setting the course right on the state's finances, and of course blaming Rauner for everything. Well, that has worked in the past. Will he get away with it this time? Those are all whoppers, of course, but maybe he will. He's counting on a press that's pretty compliant and isn't there to criticize him on this. We'll sure challenge him on the facts. Some others will. Will that message get across? Well, I guess we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, you've got four candidates. You got Jesse Sullivan, you got Paul Schimpf, you got Darren Bailey, and you got Gary Rabine, Republican candidates who've been named so far. I don't think, we know them all in some form so far from either what we've heard or what we've, through dealing with some of them. But I think it's too early to say, who exactly has got the platform to beat Pritzker, who exactly is going to get the funding to beat Pritzker. There's rumors of Richard Irvin, mayor of Aurora, coming out and getting big support of Griffin, but nobody really knows those are all rumors. Nobody knows what's true. And so I think it's going to take a while for us to figure out where that goes. So, of course, that's the big news, and everybody's going to be covering that. So I think we can move on to what I think is the next interesting thing, something you covered and got some good bit of attention on, and that's Pritzker for president. Is that a possibility? Imagine that? But tell us about that.
Well, people here in Illinois found that laughable, but you have to view this through the lens of considering just the primaries for the presidential election. And there, that quarter or a third of Americans is dominant. It's no secret among political pundits that you have to be far to the left to win those primaries for president. And if you consider the possible people for winning those primaries, Pritzker fits the bill. You check off the boxes. He has stood up for every far left issue there is, with not a single exception. And in fact, as we covered, the Biden administration has even held up Illinois as an example of the kind of progressive paradise that it wants for the country. So you can laugh at his electability in a general election or what kind of president he would make, but as a candidate for in the primaries of the Democratic Party, especially when you consider the alternatives, there are none. The Democrats have a very light bench. It is not at all laughable. And the New York Times, of course, reported that Pritzker's name has been in discussion. Pritzker says he has not initiated any of those discussions, but says he has been approached about this. I don't think there's any question for those of us who have followed him that that's something that he's had his eye on from the start. So we'll see. And there's all kinds of things that can happen in the meantime. I don't think that Joe Biden is going to make it through his full term. There's serious talk that Democrats may want to push out Vice President Harris because she's polling even more poorly than Biden is. If that happened, the Democrats would have to nominate a replacement for vice president subject to the approval of Congress. Congress would, for now, a Democratic Congress would make that decision. But why wouldn't Pritzker be as good a choice for that as anybody through their lens? It's very possible.
That's fascinating. In 2022, there's also a big issue on the ballot for Illinoisans. And that's a new amendment, and I always struggle to know what to call it. I can't remember what the formal name is, and I should have looked. But basically, on the ballot in Illinois, we'll get to vote on this. The question is, should Illinois give the Illinois unions, from what we can see, it's both public and private sector unions, the powers to collectively bargain and more and enshrine that in the Constitution? In other words, we have a lot of laws that give Illinois unions some of the biggest power, especially the public sector unions, the biggest powers in the country. It's almost unmatched in the U.S., but we would enshrine most of those powers in the Constitution. And that makes me shudder when you think about the pension protection clause, which already has tied the hands of Illinoisans, the government, et cetera. And now you put that in the Constitution? Yeah, how the heck do we ever manage out of our fiscal problems? Or I guess the only way to manage out of our problems would be to eventually collapse, because there's nothing to stop the freight train.
Yeah, and nobody understands.
It's a massive, massive thing.
And nobody understands this amendment at this point. It's going to be a huge issue. We will do our best to make sure that people understand it. On the face of it, it appears just to be an attempt to assure that right to work efforts never gain any traction and are outlawed under the Constitution in Illinois. But they really botched the wording of this, or maybe they didn't botch it, intended to go far beyond that. But what it effectively would do is make everything subject to collective bargaining, even where there is no union present. This requires some explanation and a dissection of the text of the amendment, which we will be doing. Suffice to say that this thing is not understood at this point, and it's going to become extremely controversial. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if the Democrats ultimately try to pull it, because they're going to realize that they botched the wording of this so much and have created what I think may become a firestorm over it. So we'll have to wait and see on that. We haven't written about it any extensively yet, because it's so far off, people will forget about it. But we and others will be doing that. And I'm confident that other lawyers, neutral lawyers, legal experts are going to back up what I say, that it's just a monstrosity in terms of the way it's worded, with vast unknown consequences.
Yeah, I'm going to predict that unless they pull that off, it is going to be a firestorm. And, it may be a great way to show how extreme those union powers have become in Illinois, even prior to the amendment. So look out for that from us and other groups who will be opposing the amendment and that, want to expose how little power the individual in Illinois has compared to the unions, and also, how hands are tied for city officials, mayors and councils who try to oppose the unions and repeatedly get whacked, whether it's through strikes or forced arbitration. So look for more on that.
Really be a learning opportunity too. You've written extensively about how one-sided our negotiation rules are for public unions are in Illinois. Basically, the rules are written to say that they always win. That's a fundamental issue that ties the hands of local government to try to fix their fiscal problems. And the public doesn't understand it. I think people roll their eyes when they read about this stuff, because it's a little over their heads. But this could be a real learning opportunity.
Now, of course, to the last thing that we should discuss on what are fiscal issues is what's missing on the ballot in 2022 is an amendment to pensions. That's what we really need. We don't need to give unions more power. We need to allow pensions to be reformed. And it's something that very few Illinois politicians want to talk about. We've had a couple brave ones want to do something about it. We did have Senator Darren Bailey propose an amendment much along the lines of the language that Wirepoint suggests for amending the pension pension protection clause. But for the most part, Governor Pritzker says it's untouchable. We can't reform pensions. Pension reform is a fantasy. That's what we need. We've got a recent report we just did. We added up all the pension debts across the entire state, local, state, retiree health insurance that's unfunded, and it totals $530 billion. That's an average of $110,000 a household, unpayable any way you cut it. We need a pension amendment, and Mark, we don't have one.
No, unfortunately, there are some Republicans, fiscal conservatives, who otherwise are good legislators, who are afraid of this issue. They think that they've looked at polls that seem to indicate that this is not a big issue, and they want the state just to pay these things in full. Well, that's not going to happen, and you're not going to right the ship without pension reform, and you won't get pension reform unless the Constitution is amended. So we're going to keep writing about that issue, It's that simple. So we try to stick up for the policies that we think are right. Couldn't care less if it's a Democrat or Republican that eventually tackles this. But eventually somebody's going to have to, because there's no choice otherwise.
Well, I think the other part that's important is, you know, you can not care about pensions. You can think they're boring as hell, uninterested, or it's just not your issue. But, you know, anybody on either side of the aisle has to realize that as long as pensions are consuming, you know, nearly a third of our budget, eventually 40%, if things keep getting worse, it's going to affect whatever money should be spent on crime, whatever should be spent in schools, whatever should be spent on public health, roads. It will make Illinois a miserable place to live, because our taxes won't be going to good services. They'll be going to pay debts, old debts, debts for work that's already been done by teachers and state workers and local workers. So that's a disaster waiting to happen unless we find some leadership from somebody hasn't shown up yet.
And it already is crimping that spending. I mean, I personally have a pretty liberal position on state spending for the developmentally disabled, where Illinois is badly lacking. That gets thrown out because the pensions get funded first. And that would be at the top of my list for what to fund if we could correct the pension problem, as well as lowering taxes. People got to figure this out. And as long as we have pensions going unaddressed, we're going to have high taxes and subpar services.
Well, Mark, that's all the time we have for part one of the issues to look out for in 2022. So we'll talk again next week. Thanks for joining us.
Take care. Bye-bye.